Hello, I'm Rosie Perez, and you're listening to Food Fridays with Leonard Lopate on WNYC and WNYC.org.
The last time Melissa Clark was a guest on Food Fridays, 3 weeks ago, she gave us all instructions to take to our kitchens and try out a DIY project that will make winter meals more fabulous. I know you've been quite industrious given all of your comments, tweets, and Facebook postings, and now Melissa's return for part two to hear about what you've done. The James Beard Award-winning food writer's A Good Appetite column appears each Wednesday in the New York Times food section. You can follow her on Twitter, where her handle is at Melissa Clark, and so it's a pleasure to have you here. Welcome back.
So great to be here.
And to our listeners, if you haven't already but still want to share your tips or questions, you can give us a call at 212-433-9692. You can write into our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate. You can send us a tweet where our handle is at Leonard Lopate, or also find us on Facebook. Melissa, you gave us recipes for infused vinegar, preserved lemons, and garlicky red chili hot sauce. Have you done them? Had you done them any times before you supplied us with that recipe?
Yeah, those are staples. Those are things that I make, you know, every year. I use them up and then I make them again because they're the kind of things that, you know, you can buy them, but they're so much better when they're homemade and you can personalize them and make them taste exactly the way you want them to taste.
We have posted a new version that you've developed for your preserved lemons.
Yes.
So do you tweak them all the time?
All the time. So the new version has chilies in it, which is a great little twist on the classic preserved lemons. And in fact, it is traditional. Sometimes you will see preserved lemons that are covered in chilies. And it's great because, you know, preserved lemons have that very funky flavor, very, very bright. And the chili just adds one more element. It adds a heat.
I know that if there are any Mexican listening, they're going to say, you can't just say chilies. What kind of chilies?
Yeah, that's very true. That is very true. I like to use dried chilies. First of all, dried red chilies. I use chili de arbol. I love the chili de arbol have a slight, they have a very clean heat. It's a little bit fruity. It's got a great complexity, but you can use any kind of dried chili. I wouldn't use a fresh chili here. I would use a dried chili because what you're looking for, you already have freshness from the lemons, so you don't need any more freshness. But what you do want to add is you want to add heat, and you also want to add a little bit of, you know, dried chilies have a almost like a sweet spice scent to them. They have a little bit of a woodsy scent. Sometimes they have a little fruit to it as well. And those are the elements that you're looking for in the lemons.
And then you also added star anise, which is one of those ingredients that I've been intrigued by, but many people are quite mystified by it.
It's so beautiful. A star anise, it just looks like a little flower. I love the way it looks. I love that smokiness that it has. So I added it as well,
specifically. Gives a little licorice taste.
Yeah,
to it.
The licorice, the smoke. But you can really use anything. I mean, the great thing about making this particular preserved lemon recipe or any preserved lemon recipe is you can add any dried spices you want. You're looking not to introduce any more moisture because you already have lemon juice and you already have salt and you've created this lemony brine and that's going to pick all the lemons. But what you want to do is flavor it. And so if you add anything dried, it's going to bring out, you know, that the lemon juice and the salt kind of works to extract the flavors. So you can use, I think the original recipe, which you still have on your site, has cinnamon sticks. Mm-hmm. And instead of cinnamon sticks for this version, I put in the star anise pods. You could use, gosh, a couple of cloves would be good. A pinch of fennel seed, a pinch of cumin would give it a whole other kind of flavor. It would give it that sort of, you know, that musty, cumin-y flavor that I love so much. Coriander adds almost like a citrus note to it. So there's a lot you can do.
Is this kind of like improvising on the piano, a jazz musician improvising, hearing, well, if I do this kind of chord will lead me to a certain kind of thing. If I use a different kind of chord, it'll do something totally different.
You know, I was considering that I'm not a musician at all. I'll have to trust you on that. It sounds like that's a good metaphor. But
you're hearing,
yeah.
in the sense that they're hearing,
yes,
what it's going to be like even before they hit the notes. You've got to have a sense of what it's going to taste like if you add those different.
Yeah, exactly. You do have to have, you have to be able to call up
and
all
whether
those
the combinations are going to work.
Yeah. You know, there's that famous saying that everybody always invokes, but I think it's a good one, and I'm going to say it again. What grows together goes together. So think, like, what else, you know, where, what else can I find in where lemons grow? You know, Of course, lemons grow pretty much in any temperate climate, but you can use that as just a loose guide.
Now, you cook automatically for your job, but did you find yourself cooking more during the blizzard?
Oh, the blizzard was great. The blizzard was...
People couldn't leave their homes.
I know. It was great for cooking. I got a lot of people were baking things. They were trying new things. They were making long simmered stews. They were making soups. And what was great about the blizzard is that everyone knew it was coming. Or at least most people knew it was coming. So they went out and did their grocery shopping the day before or in that morning. I saw a lot of people carrying big, heavy grocery bags and they were coming down the block. And people were ready to just try something new. And that was exciting. I got a lot of people would contact me on Instagram. They'd contact me on Twitter asking questions about my recipes. I think a lot of people baked bread. So if you baked bread, call us and let us know what happened.
Jessica, one of my producers, made the hot sauce that, from your recipe during the snowstorm. Luckily, she already had a lot of the things like the garlic, and she had a big box of jalapenos, she says. She didn't use bell peppers because she didn't have any, and she used less vinegar, only 2 cups instead of 3, because that's all she had in the house. But channeling a vacation in Belize, she made use of many clementines
that she had on hand.
And then she pureed them with tangy, spicy, delicious results, she says. Despite the clementines, it turned out green. And that's another thing. You never know what the final color is going to be.
That's funny because most hot sauces are obviously made from red chilies, which is why they're red. There's a great version.
Oh, she says a little paprika, too.
Oh, nice. To add that smoky flavor, too. I love that idea. Most chili sauces are made from red chilies. They're mostly red. But you can buy green hot sauce. One's made specifically from serranos or from jalapenos. And, of course, depending on how you process the chilies are going to be different. If you just boil them, they're going to keep their color. If you roast them, they get a caramelized kind of brownish color, which is less pretty, but it adds a little bit of sweetness.
But Jessica's experience leads me to ask you if you try to make a recipe the same way twice, or do you just tweak it every time?
I can't even make a recipe the same way once. I mean, I'll be going through, I'll have my plan. I'll have my recipe in front of me. I've written it out. If I'm developing a recipe for a cookbook or for the Times, I'll write it out. I'll often write it out first. Like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And then as I'm going through it, I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. What was I thinking? And I'll just start riffing as I go. And certainly if I'm trying to follow someone else's recipes. I made babka the other day, and I've been working on a babka story, and I was like, I'm going to follow this recipe for babka. It was from the Jerusalem cookbook. It's the Kranz cake, and it's this chocolate babka. I was like, I'm going to follow this exactly because I want to find out exactly what it's supposed to taste like, and I just couldn't do it. There was something in me. It's like, oh, I'm supposed to use lemon zest. Oh, but I have these pretty clementines. I'm going to use some clementine zest. And oh, I'm supposed to add pecans, but I don't really want pecans, so I think I'm just going to skip it. And then by the end of it, it was 70% Kranz cake and 30%, just some other creation.
Well, what happens if the combo doesn't work out? Are there still ways to salvage something?
If you're very nimble, if you're a really good cook, there's always a way. I mean, unless you've actually ruined something.
Then you just have to throw it
out. Then you just have to throw it out. But you know what works really well if you mess something up? Changing the name of what you call the dish, because it's all about people's expectations. I've made what I call my bitter eggplant salad. Sometimes eggplant's really bitter, and then you think about bitter melon, and everyone knows bitter melon's supposed to be bitter. So if you put that expectation in someone's head, they're a lot more forgiving.
So sophisticated.
It's very tricky. But it works. But I do think that people shouldn't be afraid to fail, because most failures, in fact, are usable in some way. And you know what else? A little bit of salt or lemon will fix almost anything. Or some heavy cream. A little yogurt. You can make it better.
Melissa Clark is my guest, the James Beard Award-winning food writer who writes the Wednesday A Good Appetite column in the food section of the New York Times. We're talking about infusions today and talking with listeners as well, and we'll get to some of the things that we've heard from listeners. But you'd recommended that people wear gloves when they handle hot peppers. But Steve Binger Bingham tweeted that a trong utensil can be a great way to handle spicy foods.
A what?
Look it up. I thought he had misspelled it and there should have been a strong. But a trong is a little three-pointed utensil that people use for finger foods.
Wow, and what does he do with that trang when he's is he calling? Can he call us and talk to us about the trang? I mean, I guess if you if you hold down the chili with the trang, and then you're mincing it. But how does he have it and take the seeds out? I guess you could use a grapefruit
spoon. Steve, you're going to have to call us.
You're going to have to. There are ways to avoid the. If you really hate wearing gloves, and I don't blame you, and you don't want to put plastic bags on your hands, you can. You can certainly use utensils to get around touching the chilies. And, you know, I used to be very careless about chopping chilies because I would always chop chilies and then I would immediately go wash my hands. And I thought if I immediately washed my hands, I would get rid of all the oils if I used hot water and soap.
Because if you accidentally touch your eye, you are in serious trouble.
You know, I accidentally touched my eye. I had washed my hands. But I hadn't gotten in there enough and I accidentally, you know, flicked something out of my eye and it was agony. So I'm much more careful now in trying to get anyone who reads me to wear the gloves just in case. Or, I mean, even worse, have you ever had an open cut on your finger and then you've had a chili? Yeah, there's just all these ways it could go very, very wrong. So
but
be
also
careful,
onions
people.
And garlic will cause pain.
Yeah, but not like chili pain. Chili pain is its own particular kind of pain.
Shelley from New York City wrote in that she didn't squash the lemons enough because it took a lot more juice than the recipe said. And that, I'm quoting, I added more salt to keep the proportion the same. Also, I grated the zest of the lemons that were being juiced and added that to
idea.
The brine, too.
Smart.
Why waste all that flavor, she
That
asked.
Is so smart. That is brilliant. I'm going to try that. I've never done that. But, you know, I use the every time I use lemons for everything, and I always save the zest because you can, no matter where you're adding lemon, if you add the zest as well, you're just going to reinforce that lemon flavor. So just when you're thinking about it, buy organic lemons so that you always know that you can use the skin without a problem. Give them a rinse and just grate off the zest before you cut them, and you'll find you'll just throw it in things.
Amy from Manhattan wrote in to our show page that she doesn't like vinegar, and she wonders, what else could she use in these recipes? Does lemon juice work for other things than actual lemons? What about using oil? And she worries that her dislike for vinegar is genetic.
That's interesting. But she likes lemon juice, so it's not acidic foods. It's just particularly vinegar. You know, she might want to try some vinegars that she's never had. For example, an apple cider vinegar can sometimes be very mild.
Champagne vinegar?
Champagne vinegar can be a lot more mild. I know that some vinegars are really aggressive, but there are mellower vinegars that have acidity levels closer to lemon juice. But for say that she wanted to make the DIY hot sauce, which calls for vinegar, she could try it. I wonder if it would work with lemon. I think it would work with lemon and lime juice. I think that would actually be really nice.
And can we substitute lime for lemon?
Mostly. I have never tried preserved limes. And that's something that I keep meaning to do. Because you'd think that you could. If anyone out there has ever made preserved salted limes, please call us and tell us how it went, because I'm really curious and it's something that's on my to-do list.
Barbara from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Go
Hello?
Ahead. Yes, good, Barbara.
Hi, I was just suggesting for hot peppers that you coat your hands and the pepper in oil, olive oil or whatever oil you're using, if you don't want to use gloves. And that somehow protects and keeps the oil from and the hotness from getting on your hands.
And then you could always just wipe the oil into the food and
right. You don't have to. I mean, you don't have to use a lot, but just to coat enough. And it's a little slippery.
Yeah,
you can do it.
That's what I was worried about. Is it doesn't the pepper doesn't sort of slip out of your hand onto the floor?
Not really. Not if you put a firm hand on it.
Just have a firm grip. Oh, that's good. That's a good tip. Oh, that makes sense to me.
Thank you, Barbara.
You're welcome.
And we're going to take a little break now, come back with more from Melissa Clark and you. We invite you to call us at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or at Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. We're back with Melissa Clark of the New York Times and cookbook fame. What have we decided, over 30 cookbooks so far?
Definitely over 30.
You can also follow her on Twitter, where her handle is at Melissa Clark. And people have been writing in. Frank from Newark wants to know your thoughts on sun infusions.
Sun infusions?
No, I'm not even sure I know what a sun infusion is. I guess you put the thing in the sun.
Yeah, maybe like sun tea?
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that would work. I mean, you know, usually when you infuse, you usually want to heat up the liquid, right? So you want to heat the vinegar, you want to heat up the lemon juice, although not with preserved lemons, but often you want to heat as part of the process. And there's no reason why you shouldn't use the heat of the sun if you have sun, which we do not today in New York, but people in all kinds of places do have sun.
And along those lines, Bob from Manhattan told us he makes an infused tea, just lets equal parts of chopped ginger and honey sit in a jar. And then if you add a bit of hot water, it makes great ginger tea.
You know, I have been doing that too. I've been doing that exact thing. I mean, I haven't been, it's been more careless. I've had a little sore throat. So I've been drinking ginger tea and I make a big pot of it. And then I just, with honey, exactly, grate up my ginger. This is a great thing. I use a microplane to grate the ginger because it gets it so fine. And it extracts so much of the juice that you get a lot of power from this ginger. I put it in a tea ball. I throw it in a teapot. Add my honey, and then I let it sit all day, and I pour myself half a cup of that that infusion, and then half a cup of boiling water, and it's great.
Doesn't it get stronger and stronger?
It does, and it's good. If you're combating a cold, it's terrific. It really, you know, ginger has all those great antibacterial properties, anti-inflammatory as well. So they say. It tastes good. I like it because it tastes good.
Lou from Stony Point. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I have a question for Melissa. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I'm cooking sauerbraten tonight. It's been marinating for 72 hours, and the recipe calls for a four-hour cook time at 325, and I'm concerned whether or not it's possible to overcook it. Should I be looking for an internal temperature? And my other question is I'm making cabbage and potato balls, and one recipe calls for taking the balls out of boiling water when they float, and the other one says 3 minutes after they float.
Okay, that's okay. Both really good questions. Let's talk about the cabbage balls first, which are basically cabbage and potato balls, which are kind of like matzo balls or like gnocchi, anything that, or dumpling, anything that you want to boil in water. Absolutely, the only way to know if it's done is to test it. I mean, yes, it needs to float for sure. That's the sign number one. But it's true that sometimes it takes longer. Even if it's floating, it might not be done yet. So just take one out, cut it in half, and just look at the center. If it's doughy and hard, then it's not ready. Give it a couple more minutes. But really, you can't really tell if it's done or not just by the floating. So
So I should do a trial run on one and then do the other with the same timing.
You can do them all at the same time and then just pluck one out as it's cooking.
Oh, okay.
You know, and then
sacrifice one for the greater good of all the others.
And if it comes out perfectly, then you get to eat it, which is really good. You get a little hors d'oeuvre. I hope the recipes that you use actually talked about that maybe somewhere, because I think that's important when you're writing a recipe for things like matzo balls or potato balls to really make sure that you cut into it, because you just don't know what's going on inside that thing until you take a knife.
There was a mention that the woman said her mom did it and always tested one first and before she did the other. So that was a little bit of a good tip. But I figured your recipes online got me through Thanksgiving. So I figured it would be great to talk to you and ask that question.
Yeah, that's great. I think that just go ahead and throw them all in and then just pull one out and test it. And just have the colander ready for draining them, because if they're ready, you want to drain them right away. You don't want to. I mean, you can overcook them by a little bit, like a couple of minutes. A minute or two isn't going to hurt. But if you continue to cook them, they're going to fall apart. So that's what you want to watch out for.
What's the best way to keep them warm, just in a plate in the oven?
You know what you should do? If you don't mind coating them with some melted butter, just drain them, coat them with melted butter, and yeah, put them in a low oven. And then the melted, or you could use olive oil, but the fat is going to help them from drying out as well.
Great. How about the sauerbraten as far as
cook
time? Do I have to worry?
You know, 4 hours seems right to me for sauerbraten. I mean, that seems normal. But yes, you do have to eat. Overcooking, it's good. Because you're cooking at 325, you have a long margin of error. It's a very low heat. So it's not going to overcook in 5 minutes. It may overcook if you leave it in there for 5 hours. But start checking after three.
And should I use just the regular bake setting on the oven or convection?
You don't need convection. You don't need convection because you're in a pot. So it doesn't need to. It doesn't need convection. But what you're looking for is you want the meat to be falling apart a little bit. So take a fork and just push it. And you want the strands of meat should start to come apart. It shouldn't be tight. They should be very loose. And that's a good way to know if it's done. But start testing after 3 hours and know that it could take four. It could even take five. And that's not unusual. It so much depends on the shape of the cut of the meat. You know, thinner pieces cook more quickly. A big chunk will cook more slowly.
Colby from Chelsea, not Shelby from Colby. Hi. Hi, Colby.
Hi, this is Colby. Thank you so much for having me.
Go ahead.
I have a question. I've been making my own bitters infusions in my apartment for a couple months now, and instead of infusing all of these herbs ranging from orange peel, cinnamon, cardamom pods, fenugreek, a couple other roots, spices, individually in small little eyedropper vials. And I was wondering, including vanilla, some other chilies, if you had any advice on how I could maybe incorporate these into other things other than, you know, the typical cocktail.
Oh, bitters are great for cooking. They because they bring out sweetness and other ingredients. Do you like to bake? Do you ever make or make jam? I mean, they're great for baking for sweet things because when you add bitter, you know, to anything with fruit, it really it adds complexity, but then it also brings out the natural sweetness of the fruit.
Well, let me pose a challenge. I live in a 100-square-foot apartment with a hot plate.
Okay, got it. So we're not talking baking. We're talking compotes, jams. You know what's in season right now? Kumquats. I have been seeing kumquat. I mean, it's like one of those ingredients where, you know, you buy them and you're like, what am I going to do with these kumquats? I mean, they're so cute and you just can't resist them. But any citrus fruit you can make a compote with, you could just, you chop it up. Keep the peel on it. If it's an edible peel like a kumquat, you can take the peels off and just use the sections and add bitters to that. Bitters and orange go really well together, the sour and the bitter, and then you add sugar or honey, and that'll all work well. Gosh, you know, you can use it for savory cooking too. In vinaigrettes, bitters are fantastic in salad dressings. Are you a salad eater? Do you like to make vinaigrette?
Definitely.
Yeah. So I would try a couple of drops of the different, the chili one, the chili bitters sounds good to me. The cardamom, any of those would be really nice in a vinaigrette. And don't just use it for salads. Also use it, you know, you can like boil beets or Brussels sprouts and or cauliflower and use a vinaigrette with some bitters in any of those vegetables. That'd be great.
Thank you for calling us. We're speaking with Melissa Clark. Actually, this is the second of a three-part infusion challenge, and somewhere along the line we're going to get back to infusions. But a listener on Twitter writes, at a cooking class in Oaxaca, the chef kept a half lime next to the soap for post-chili hand wash. She got the oil off of the lime rind.
Ah. You know, that,
limes do so many wonderful things.
You know, okay, this is what I'm starting to think, that maybe you need the oil to dissolve the chili, you know, because the chili, you've got chili oils. That's the hot oil that's getting on your fingers, right? So maybe it needs to be dissolved in another kind of oil. So if regular soap might not work unless it's something, you know, like maybe. So I'm thinking of the woman who called in and uses olive oil. That's going to keep it as well. I love the lime oil. This is I love coming on your show because I learn so much. Your listeners are one smart bunch.
Jessica in Brooklyn tells us that she used Meyer lemons during the blizzard, but found them to be too mild for the dishes she was cooking. What are some recipes that really work with Meyer lemons?
That is a good point. In fact, I use Meyer lemons a lot, and I'll use it interchangeably with lemons, but you need to use more to get the same acidity, or you used to use a teeny drop of vinegar along with it, because it's true, it doesn't have that that same acid.
They're almost
content.
Like mixing lemons and oranges.
Exactly. There are a lot of recipes out there that are specifically call for Meyer lemons, or anytime you want something a little bit mild. I have a great pasta dish, pasta with lemons, which you can use regular lemons if you blanch them, but if you use Meyer lemons, it's sweeter. You don't have to blanch them for as long. It's just a more delicate flavor. So any pasta with lemon dish, you can try Meyer lemons. I think that's going to work. Anytime you're making a marmalade or a cake, anything sweet that has lemon in it, Meyer lemons will be fine in terms of acid. And they'll also just lend a more floral sort of complex taste.
Anastasia writes, my sister grows fantastic lemons in her Florida backyard. These babies are no joke and perhaps the greatest lemons New York City has ever seen. They could possibly be eaten raw, tangerine style, but now that they've been preserved, these lemons can stay active and will add a zing to many upcoming dishes. Thank you for the recipe.
Oh, yay. I'm happy to hear it. You know, my mom was growing lemons for a while in Brooklyn and inside, and we had a little lemon tree. We had 8 Meyer lemons 1 year, so it is possible in New York City to have a little lemon tree.
I grew up with a couple of people named Meyer. I'm not surprised. They were in Brooklyn, too. Miriam from Morningside Heights, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Miriam. I just want to say I don't recall, and I've listened quite intently, you're mentioning at all that I use organic lemon juice. I mean, it's not to plug them, but it's the one I find is called Santa Cruz. And when I don't have I always use it because I put it drops of it in a seltzer every day. Instead of buying lemon-lime seltzer, I have seltzer that I just add lemon juice or lime juice. They make both. And I use it also almost exclusively in salad dressing because I love lemon juice.
But
and
you,
I
but you
then
prefer
will add
that
rice
to
wine vinegar
but,
to
but
make
Miriam,
it a little bit less sour. And I'll add various vinegars when I feel like it.
Miriam, I got to ask you a question. You prefer this to just using a lemon or a lime, the real thing?
It's not that I prefer it. It's that it's concentrated and it's there in a bottle. I also buy real lemons. I don't buy that chemical stuff in bottles. I do buy lemons and limes and usually organic. And when I need zest, I do use those for zests, but I don't have to then consume so many lemons when I don't need the zest. And I think that the organic lemon juice is it's a very good quality, you know, organic lemon juice.
So what are your thoughts?
You know, I haven't had the brand that she mentioned, but I've never had a purchased bottle of lemon juice, even though, you know, I've seen them and they're pure and they don't have a lot of additives. I've never found one to be as fresh and zingy and have just as good a flavor as a lemon. And the thing about having a lemon is, well, first of all, I love having lemons in my house because I do use the zest very frequently. I think that it's a tactile pleasure to work with a lemon. To cut a lemon in half, you just get that burst of lemon aroma. First of all, you're holding this beautiful fruit. It's yellow. It's pretty. I don't know. I wouldn't want to trade that in to, even though it might be easier to use something from a bottle, I would lose too much. And I think that I just don't think you get the same flavor. However, that is just my opinion.
I'm also concerned that after you open the bottle, it starts deteriorating.
Usually, yeah. I mean, unless there's some kind of preservative in it, and there probably is something in it, because otherwise, you know, lemon juice, if you squeeze lemon, I mean, another idea is if you don't want, say that you don't want to be bothered cutting lemons every single day, you can make your own. You know, you can juice two or three lemons, make sure to strain out the pulp, and that'll last a few days in the fridge, and then you can just put a drop in your seltzer, or you can use it for salad dressings, and then you don't have to cut up a fresh lemon every day.
Alana from Brooklyn shared this suggestion on our show page. She makes a chive blossom vinegar infusion. It's done in early summer, but the vinegar lasts well into the winter. The vinegar takes on the amazing color of the chive blossom.
I cannot wait to make that. I cannot wait for the chives to start blossoming, which is going to be a while, but I think that sounds fantastic.
And talking about the sun, Joe from Brooklyn wrote in that sun pickling is commonly used in India. For example, Julie Shani in Classic Indian Cooking says that for best results, place the jar during the day in the sun for sweet lemon pickle with cumin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I can just picture it. I can feel the heat on my skin just listening to that. It sounds fantastic on this snowy day in New York.
And then Sarah from New York City said that she uses Paula Wolford's recipe for preserved Meyer lemons, which doesn't keep them attached, something we discussed the last time you
yes.
were here. She also blanches the whole lemon for a few minutes to make them easier to cut. She uses them with garlic and oil in a blender for a knockout sauce for grilled fish.
That sounds, you know, preserved lemon and grilled fish is really a fantastic combination. It is, you know, lemon and fish is classic, but the preserved lemon adds this whole other funky flavor. It's just wonderful.
Will on Twitter asks, do you get concerned about dulling your knife's blades when you're slicing lemons frequently?
I just sharpen them up. I mean, I never thought about it. I guess the acid in the lemons might affect the blade.
How do you sharpen them? Do you have one of those machines?
No, I have this great little device. It's I know they sell it at the MoMA store because it's also a beautiful little device, but one of my friends gave it to me. It's like the electric ones, except that you do it by hand, but it has a guide in there. So it has three spaces, and you run your knife through each one. You put a little water in the bottom, and it's fantastic. I use it once a week. It keeps my knife sharp.
I've read that you can also sharpen your knife by simply running it through aluminum foil.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's true.
That sounds, the sound of that, though, in my head, I can hear the way that sounds, and it sounds disturbing to me.
We don't have a lot of time, but we want to sneak Syed in here. Hi, Syed from Manhattan.
Hi, Leonard. So, what do you call eggplants? And then we steam them, and then after we steam them, then we put them in the cooler or refrigerator, and when it cools off, and then we put them in the jar and we pour the vinegar, and the same we do with the carrots. We steam carrots, and we put them along with eggplants, and then so eggplants and carrots, and we pour vinegar and a ton of dry mint, and fresh garlic, and you can also add some jalapeno jalapeno pepper and cabbage.
This does not sound very Indian, Syed.
I'm from Afghanistan, so we do that in India. They do the mango chutney. They don't do that in India, so we do it in Afghanistan. So
that sounds like a pickle. It's like a pickle.
Yeah, like a sort of pickle.
Oh, that sounds fantastic! And the eggplant, is it in cubes?
Like a whole eggplant. We steam them first.
Uh-huh.
Not that it's too done, like halfly done.
Got it.
And then you can slice them. You cool them off. You know, usually baby eggplant, like small ones, not the large ones.
That sounds great.
And we also steam carrots. You know, when it's steamed?
Yep.
And then we put them into the jar after they cool off. And a lot of dry mint.
I got to go, Syed. We've run out of time. Thank you.
That sounds great, though. I'm going to try that.
And, Melissa, you'll be coming back for the last and third part of the DIY challenge on February the 19th. We invite listeners to send in ways that they've used their infusions and preserves and hot sauces. And you've jump-started things for us by giving us another recipe, Israeli couscous salad with apricots and preserved lemon.
Yes.
Sounds yummy.
It is.
Use 2.5 tablespoons of chopped preserved lemon. How much of the lemon that you preserved is that?
That's, you know, it's 2.5 tablespoons is probably just 1/4 or maybe 2/4, so half a lemon. So it leaves you plenty for other things.
Meanwhile, you could read Melissa Clark's column every week in the New York Times in the food section. Her column is called A Good Appetite, and you can follow her on Twitter, where her handle is @MelissaClark. As always, great pleasure.
Pleasure was mine.